Life is full of what-ifs, some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems. But getting therapy has its own problems, too. Like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Four Center podcast feed. This is one of our deep dives, one of our back to tanks of talk. So dive in and enjoy the hopefully healing fluid. I'm Ken. I'm tempted to say edit, but no. I'm Joseph Scrimshaw, and I was thinking in my head, like, okay, keep moving. Get to Ken. And I just said, I'm Ken Knapsack. I know I'm not you. I'm Joseph Scrimshaw.
I'm Ken Knapsack, I think.
Total identity crisis.
Look, you know, live to tape is a mantra I live on, which means a lot of mistakes sometimes get in, and I'm always fine with it. Little stumbles, I'm the king of I don't care. Just have some momentum and personality, kids. That's your broadcasting lesson for today. And occasionally call your co-host you and you your co-host.
That's right. That was some great wisdom from me, Ken Knapsack. Anyway, how are you doing, Joseph?
Oh man, let me tell you, I've been drumming. I've been watching David Lynch films. I've been doing great. Doing great.
Excellent. I've been enjoying some sports and some nachos. Great stuff.
Wait a minute. Are you saying the real Joseph doesn't enjoy a nacho? Is it just Ken?
I do. I feel like you probably have like a science to nachos.
I do. Oh, that's hilarious. And I always think of you and have frozen pizza. So this is what the story is.
Well, we are excited now that we know who we are to get into our Star Wars discussion today. As always, we want to let you know that today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. You can get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/forcecenter. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. This week, we are recommending Mission to Disaster by Justina Ireland. To download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/forcecenter. Again, that's audibletrial.com/forcecenter for a free audiobook on us, but we still have more.
We do indeed. Another offer from our friends at Inside Editions, publisher of a ton of great Star Wars books, and they are offering 35% off across their website if you use this special link, insideeditions.com/discount/FC35. This week, we're recommending the Inside Editions book, The Mini Book of Lightsabers. We love this cute little book of these deadly, elegant weapons. Again, use this link, insideeditions.com/discount/FC35.
Look, cute, deadly, elegant. That is a great Twitter bio and a great description of that book. We are going to get into our main topic this week, Ken. We try to look around for the deep dive. Sometimes it's something that's just really on our minds or our souls. Sometimes it's a memory. Sometimes it's something that's kind of a floating around in the fandom discussion. And I think for me, I'm just thinking ahead a lot about the new Star Wars stories that are coming to Disney Plus. What's going to come to the theaters eventually? And I started to think about this word edgy, Ken.
Ooh, yeah.
What exactly it means, how it relates to Star Wars. I think part of this was on my mind because there's a lot of discussion about the new Batman movie, The Batman, being a gritty and edgy take on Batman, many of the on-screen takes on Batman been. So there was a lot of discussion around that, about what does gritty mean? What does edgy mean? And to kind of frame this, I think a lot of what gives Star Wars its power, in my opinion, is the tension. Star Wars is many things, and sometimes that goes really great for people, and other times it's this kind of tension that they want to resolve, but it doesn't really resolve because at its core, to me, it's a thrilling space fantasy adventure serial, B-movie, gee-whiz, fun, and it is also profound philosophy about how to get through life and death and family and darkness. It's got all sorts of exciting battles, and yet it is often arguing for empathy and pacifism. You know, it is a morality tale for kids. George Lucas says, I made it for 12-year-olds. And then sometimes this thing that is made for 12-year-olds is just full of death, 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 and more death, death on a planetary scale, death. It's for kids. So there's always this tension in Star Wars. And I think one of them is that Star Wars can be silly, fun, weird, extremely wear its heart on its sleeve, optimistic and hopeful, but then also kind of like edgy, gritty, badass. That was such a cool way that our hero or our villain took out that person. And that contrast, I think, between weird, fun, silly, and gritty, badass is, I think, one of the big ones of Star Wars. So we're going to talk about that tension, but specifically the edgy side, how we define it, our relation to it, its place in the past and the future of the saga. Ken, for you, how would you describe this edgy side of Star Wars? What would you include in that? What does that mean to you?
What I would include, you know, let me just start here. It's so funny you talk about this tension. This just popped in my head the other day. I was rewatching Empire of Dreams. You know, we were discussing the legacy and passing of Alan Ladd Jr. on the news show. So maybe just watch Empire of Dreams. Bill Moyers, American journalist, former press secretary for LBJ's administration, I believe. He was in the, and there's a great clip of him of talking about how Star Wars came out at the right time, right? If it's too early, it's Buck Rogers. If it's too late, our sensibilities have changed, but it came out at the right time, post-Vietnam War, all those kind of things that people talk about when talk about 77 and Star Wars, even the state of cinema, the French Connection, everyone wanted that. And George comes out with this fantasy space fairy tale, and then he pauses and he's like, and also Star Wars is a lot of fun. I think people need to forget it's a lot of fun to watch. There's that tension, and in that tension, you there's so many things to connect with. So to get back to your question here, Joseph, sorry for the
pro. No, and maybe we should just do an episode someday about all the tensions.
so many tensions. So what would I include in that? I start with the Revenge of the Sith. The Vader always saying Clone Wars, tales of witches and Sith and pirates, funny ones, but they're still pirates. Violence, the violence of Mando and Boba Fett. But here's what it is. It goes beyond just violence and how it looks on screen, red lightsabers. It's to me kind of when the full weight of the character's choices are on display and it's often met with consequences is when Star Wars gets edgy and dark for me. And maybe it's some of the bigger choices or steps towards those choices. Maybe the choice is something else, but I'm thinking of a lot of the Anakin stuff. Revenge of the Sith is definitely one of the, it's PG-13. I was in a theater that kids cried at. being terrified about the Palpatine situation when he gets electrocuted. But I think about it, it's the weight of those choices to me. And that's not necessarily something I've always thought. I think that's changed for me. And that's where I go now, where I'm thinking Star Wars, edgy Star Wars is you have done something and perhaps it's wrong.
I like that a lot. And just in terms of the way we're talking about it, we're using the word edgy, gritty, because that's kind of what gets thrown around. Yeah. Do you think that's the right word to capture what we're talking about? Would it be better to say the dark side of Star Wars? What do you think about just the word edgy?
It's a great question, right? Dark and gritty is that phrase that gets tossed around so much that I don't even know the meaning of it anymore sometimes. It's just the way of it, especially if you're in the YouTube space and been on movie channels and movie fighting and all that kind of stuff. You're like, oh, I like dark and gritty. Like, what is that even? Is it just the way the cinematographer shot it? What is it? Do you like crying, screaming, curse words, butts? Like, what is it? I don't know.
This movie has butts. Yeah. It's for... do you like a dark, gritty take on Superman? Well, here's his butt.
Yeah, so I don't even know. I just kind of get a sense of what edgy means and what it means to Star Wars, you know?
Yeah, I think for me, just I'll try to keep this short. I know I've talked about it before. I kind of got to process it through my own life. And when I was growing up, it was a lot of sitcoms or procedurals on television, or even the early comic books I read, where nothing big ever changed, right? Like it reset. Like, you know, maybe, you know, Sam and Diane's relationship would change a little bit, but Norma's still at the bar, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, if you're watching, you know, an episode of Chips, kind of the same things would happen, you know, and it would reset. And there's a sense that nothing ever changes. Everything is kind of safe, right? Mm-hmm. And for me, where dark and gritty, where I started going like, yeah, I like dark and gritty, is when some of the seminal comic books came out, like Watchmen and The Dark Knight Rises, which both approach it as like, what if this was a little bit more real? What if, you know, these characters were truly violent, truly tortured? And it felt like this burst of honesty to me. Mm-hmm. So being dark, being gritty, being cynical, being sarcastic when I was a young man felt like honesty, because it felt like everything else was trying to say, just pretend that everything resets and everything's fine and don't talk about problems. So dark and gritty to me used to be real.
Mm-hmm. You are right on. It's Always Sunny on TV, right? That's kind of the way it was. And then the shows that started popping up were, you know, where it wasn't as some of the big early HBO shows, right? And I think honest is a great way to look at it. Just like, here's the real world. Here's what actually going to happen. Here's when the choices go wrong. I think that's the starting point for all of it. Again, I think over time, the conversation gets lost and it is just might be, all jokes aside, might be nudity, violence and everything, you know, and Batman's cursing now. I think it ends up there, but I think you're right. We are in that era. I kind of remember for the first time seeing shows and going, wow, you know, that person died or something. You know, I always bring up Robotech. The reason I bring up Robotech is it's the first time I saw a character die.
Yeah.
I saw a thing, there was a consequence to this war. G.I. Joe, nothing happens. Pew, 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 lasers. And they're all back next week. Roy Folker died like 11 episodes into the show. You know?
Right.
And,
yeah.
And that was that. That is, I think, the starting point, the genesis of this edgy conversation.
Exactly. And then for me, I think if it is going forward, once dark and gritty becomes like a thing that honestly Hollywood or anybody in a creative industry can go, oh, that's what people like, we'll do that, right? Mm-hmm. That it can lose some of its heart and its honesty, you know? And I still like dark and gritty things that are like, we are really trying to pursue something that is real, that the characters are in real trauma and they live in worlds where actual bad things can happen. There are high stakes. I still like that, but I think there's a kind of dark and gritty that has taken over where the dark and gritty isn't the surface. It's not just the cinematography, the swearing and the butts, but the life perspective that yes. cynicism is the valid perspective in that hope and optimism and everybody will work together is foolish naivete and dark, gritty, raining, everything is tragedy is the correct view. And for me, now that this debate has gone on so long, I think we're in these couple of pendulum swings. Yeah. And for me, I like dark and gritty stuff as long as it isn't getting totally into that is the only valid perspective of the world of like why everybody is traumatized, why even try, the systems are broken, you can never do anything. So, you know, just brood and punch people. I think the interesting relationship that Star Wars has with this is I think it has a ton of storytelling that is the dark and gritty that I liked as a young man, which is about let's be honest about the trauma that people are going through. Let's be honest that the stakes are high. If you make a bad choice, really bad things can happen and they happen forever and that's it. I think Star Wars tells that, but I think so often it tries to keep its hope. And that's why I think I like the dark and gritty in Star Wars is because it ultimately is in most Star Wars stories about hope.
Yeah. Yeah. I was probably going to make a big sweeping judgment on dark and gritty fans. And I'm going to pull back from it other than say, it's just, I think, again, the definition has changed from the starting point. I think you're great to point that honest entry point into the world of edgy. And now it has become something else that I'll start to discuss more.
Yeah. We're getting, I know we're getting a little ahead of ourselves probably to frame it this way. So to answer the question that I started us off on before I went on a dark, edgy tangent, for me in Star Wars, I think, there are the stories where, like, in order to tell this journey back up to hope, you know, in order to show the power of characters being able to get up, we got to knock them down, right? And a lot of the darkness is in when individual characters are knocked down or make choices, like you said, that knock them down or mired in really dark periods for the galaxy. So things like Vader's fall, right? I think I don't know a lot of the Old Republic storytelling as well, but from the bits I know, kind of spending time with those Sith Lords, I can get into the edgy stuff. Things like blowing up entire planets. I think Star Wars has some good war is hell type storytelling. Like that Pong Krell arc is extremely dark. Cassian killing Tivik because he feels like that's what he has to do. For me, going back to the original dark and gritty, you know, Luke getting his hand cut off by his own father. That's kind of dark and gritty. So I think there are a lot of dark and gritty events, and sometimes I think we're invited to sort of wallow in it and enjoy it for like this is the dark times, and it's cool and it's edgy and it's high stakes. But the other thing for me that I wanted to kind of lay out as an opinion right at the top is tone is everything. You look at A New Hope, and that great quote that you pull is like, and by the way, it's fun. You know, Star Wars is it's this whiz-bang adventure that's a break from Nixon and Vietnam. In this incredibly fun movie, Owen and Beru are reduced to skeletons. Leia's physically tortured. Almost every Rebel pilot is killed, including Luke's buddy from back home. Luke then loses his other parental figure of Ben. Millions are killed on Alderaan and the Death Star. But it's all about tone, right? Those events happen. They matter, but the tone, the way the story is told makes such a big difference. And that's so important to me is like, what are we talking about when dark and gritty? Are we talking about what actually happens? Mm-hmm. Are we talking about the tone? Are we talking about the message we're supposed to receive? Dark and gritty can exist on many different levels.
Yeah. Yeah. And by the way, that very fun movies to help you escape from Nixon, Watergate and Vietnam is about Nixon, Watergate and Vietnam.
Right. It's a different approach to it of like, maybe we can wrestle with these ideas in a different way, in a more hopeful way of like, yeah, things are bad, but how could we get out of this rather than how can we just roll around and this sucks, you know, versus how can we get out of it?
Yeah, and Lucas clearly wanted to go on to Apocalypse Now and do another different side of it, right? You know, I think tone is right.
Yeah. So many things to discuss with this. I want to ask you about this right at the top. When, if ever, does a focus on gritty, darker, edgy in Star Wars concern you? When does it ever make you go, I'm not sure about this, this too gritty for me, any of that?
I think it's when it gives too much of a chance for the glorification of evil. Mm. And personally, I think a lot of the Old Republic stuff does that, but I've got to be careful to say here, it's not necessarily the content, it's not necessarily the creators. I think sometimes it attracts, I want to say, a certain kind of fan base. This is where I was trying to dance up to this line of not making some general sweeping accusatory statement, but I think often the folks that in my life that I know that are like, I wish Star Wars more edgy, they kind of don't want to grow, change, or adapt with Star Wars. They stopped at about 22. They really love people getting cut in two with a lightsaber, and they want to live in that. And that's the gritty that they want. And therefore, the cool, badass, evil characters, which, by the way, I love too, right? I have a lot of Vader stuff here. Not Anakin stuff. I have a lot of Vader stuff hanging in my office. I have some Maul stuff. I have all that stuff. So I get it. I get it. And as we'll discuss later, I've even lived in that mindset, but it's a chance for the glorification of evil. And I tried, Joseph, I tried really hard. So, okay. I'm not going to make a reference to Game of Thrones here, but these are my two favorite franchises. Okay. My two favorite fantasy IP are Star Wars and World of Ice and Fire, GOT to be short. And I go to them for two different distinct reasons. Star Wars presents what could be. To me, Game of Thrones really often deals with what is. It's so steeped in history, but so Star Wars. But it's, you know, look at the Onderon arc taken ripped from the headlines of the 80s. Soviet and Afghan war. We just did this on Clone Wars Report, but it offers a potential different ending. What could be, where Game of Thrones and that whole world is a gray area. Always hear people talking about, but I go to it for two different reasons, and I'm more inspired by Star Wars, quite frankly, right? And I think that's always got to be kind of the purpose of Star Wars, and so that's when it starts to when Star Wars runs up against that or leaves room to glorify some of the stuff. Case, I always go to the example of season one of Game of Thrones, episode 7. Bronn steps forward to fight for Tyrion. He kills Ser Vardis without honor. He's accused of it, and he's like, "Yep, I didn't fight with honor. He did. He's dead. That's how he survived." That's a very different take than Star Wars, right? And I love that moment. And there's a lot to take for that moment. But that to me, that moment doesn't belong in Star Wars.
Mm.
And I'm okay with that. I'm okay with the two separate kind of takes on it. Star Wars is a different. It just has a different purpose for being here.
Yeah, I think I kind of feel that way as well. And I don't mind characters like Bronn existing in Star Wars. I think a lot of those characters do, you know?
Yeah.
But it for me, it is all about what is the story ultimately saying? That's when I would ever get concerned about edgy in Star Wars. Like, look, I cheer when characters I like do violent things. When, you know, very first episode of Mandalorian, we meet him by cutting a guy in half with the door, and I cool action move, you know, and I applaud and I like it as a viewer, you know, because that is a part of it. It's the escapism and it's the showing us who that character is. But for me, I ended up loving The Mandalorian because it wasn't just a celebration of this guy's got it rough, so he kills people because he has to. The end. They're absolutely valid story, but it's such a Star Wars story of like, and he finds something. He's still violent. He still wrestles with that side of himself. He still sees that as is absolutely necessary. That is his way. But he finds this other part of himself, and there's this balance to, you know, the light and the dark. And that is within him, and there's the growth, and that is Star Wars to me. So I'm like, hey, pile on as many cool lightsaber fights as you want to. I will cheer for Force users doing surprising takedowns, you know, if it's showing us who the character is. The gritty bothers me when it becomes the moral.
Yeah.
When it becomes like, yep, cynicism is right. Yep. The system stacked against you. So just look out for yourself. You're the loner. Like that's those themes. They aren't Star Wars to me, because Star Wars is about getting back up, finding hope, you know, even when it's really scary, working together with other people, all these things that are really scary to do. And that's where it becomes like, no matter how many people die and how many cool ways or how much rain there is, that's where the story takes us. And that's the inspiration it gives us.
Yeah. No, fascinating stuff there. That, again, living in a different world. It's like, I don't know if I ever want I don't want young 7-year-old Palpatine getting wronged. And so we have a, well, we understand a little bit of him. You know, I know that probably exists in his timeline and you can analyze Star Wars would probably, but it's, I like Palpatine, Palpatine being what he is, the embodiment of evil, end of story. He's the fear at the end of the tunnel we must confront versus there is even one moment, and it might just be one, but one moment with Ramsay Bolton where you're like, oh, the hole in his soul was his father and his upbringing. Oh, I see it. You know, and I was like, I don't need that in Star Wars for Palpatine.
Yeah, and I feel like, yeah, and I feel like for me, like with a lot of the dark side characters, like Anakin, Ben Solo, that we do see the bad things that happened to them that led them to being tempted to make a terrible choice, but it's still their choice. And yes, that's what I ultimately like about Star Wars. I have great empathy for them. I feel like lots of people around them failed them or made bad choices around them. But to me, that is a little of the morality tale of Star Wars, if we always have our own choice.
Yeah, yeah. And I love it with the other characters. I think specifically it's like I want Palpatine to be the center of evil. Sorry, Chief, but you are. You know what I mean? Because that's to the whole purpose of George sitting down with that yellow notepad to write this all. Like we are in this era of post Nixon Watergate Vietnam War. And I'd love that to not happen again. How do I speak to the kids and give them a fairy tale of how your choices matter? Oh, here we go. Let's do that. I think Star Wars always needs to be tied to that.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And because I brought it up to begin. You brought in Game of Thrones. I will briefly mention the Batman. The character of Batman is so, you know, tied to my journey with Dark and Gritty because it was that Dark Knight Rises. We're like, oh wow, cool. This is it. And then, you know, we've had lots of Dark and Gritty takes, and then, you know, when the Batman movie that just came out was being advertised as a Dark and Gritty take, I was like, okay, I don't know. We'll really see. And it really reminded me of Star Wars without spoilers, because everything about the aesthetic is a 70s, you know, noir film with that lighting. I don't think I saw a butt. Maybe I blinked. It's dark and gritty, but what the story is about is a very Star Wars message to me. The story is how Batman becomes a Jedi Knight. and that really crystallized for me when we were going to have this discussion that I'm so fine with lots of gritty stuff as long as it isn't, I enjoy gritty, edgy, dark stuff as long as it isn't ultimately the message that's what you should take from it is. Mm-hmm. And that's maybe the thing that I see sometimes on in Star Wars. I don't know what's in people's hearts, but from what I see online sometimes, kind of the way that people, and it's usually people I do not know. I just see that when I am scrolling Star Wars topics, there is a part of Star Wars fandom that I think can be about the power fantasy. At least that's what I read from what people are putting online. Maybe that's not their heart, but from what I see online, it worries me when like the worship of Sith Lords becomes a power fantasy of just like, because it's so relatable, because I think we all feel traumatized. We all feel like things are unfair and people don't understand us. And it's such a temptation to be like, what if I just had all this power and anybody who wronged me, I'd just take care of them.
Mm-hmm.
And it worries me that anybody would stop at that part of Star Wars where it's just a dark power fantasy. Totally understandable. I think it's the power of telling stories about scary people of every once in a while you have a day where you wish you were Darth Vader, right? But you can never stop there because that's not the message and that's not who I want to be as a human.
I would not want to know that you are taking Darth Malkus's words at the surface level, you know?
Yeah.
He's got some points about the Jedi. Hey, it would not be a good spot to be in,
I thought. Yeah, I don't want to be standing out on the street handing out the Sith were right brochures. That's not for me.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm.
So I do want to talk about our journey with the dark, gritty, edgy side of Star Wars. As you went from being a kid fan to a young adult fan, did you focus on and enjoy the edgy side of Star Wars more?
Yeah, absolutely. And look, even as late as going into The Last Jedi, 2017, which seems like a lifetime ago, I was intrigued by the idea of a grittier Star Wars. The reason I bring up that, you know, Rian Johnson stuff, or, you know, we've been talking couple episodes ago. If you know, it's the director from Breaking Bad and Looper, and saying, oh, he's going to bring that to Star Wars. And even Ryan was like, I got some humor. I go into Last Jedi with that because we also were coming out of Rogue One, which, man, I love Rogue One. We're going to talk about that. But I got to tell you, Porgs changed my mind. I had no room for Porgs in my life before I saw them. Maybe even in the press junkets leading up. But I like the idea of whatever that was. Again, not the power fantasy side, but just this idea of dark and gritty no longer meant just an honest take, some stuff that's already there, but it meant like lightsaber through the heart and blood comes out. And I want an adult Star Wars. And I'm not talking about, just sexual situations and nudity. I'm just like, I want my Nolan Dark Knight, but I want it to be in Star Wars. And I have no problem with that. I think Rogue One hits that. I think parts of Last Jedi hit it. Rise of Skywalker starts with a little mini horror film. Like, mm-hmm. Revenge of the Sith, those two poor kids behind me at the Cinerama Dome screaming in fear as Palpatine and Mace fight, screaming.
Is it when his face is melting?
Yeah, his face bubbling. Is melting, and these two boys were bawling. Bawling.
Sorry to laugh. It's just funny because it's totally understandable that kids would deceive it that way. And for me, that's like one of those dark, gritty moments that's like, it's still bizarre, pulpy, B-movie stuff, at the same exact time.
Power, unlimited power is now one of my favorite lines, and I used to make fun of it. It's so great. So anyways, all I had to say, it's like, I get it. I've definitely grown, but I think I've studied a little bit more than I used to on what Star Wars is about. And I have fun. You mentioned the Batman thing. I haven't seen it. Batman's like my favorite superhero for what it's worth. I've answered that question before in other spots, but I have no skin in the Batman game. But I want to ask you, because I've been seeing some of what you're saying of like, yeah, people are saying dark and gritty, but it's also got a lot of comedy. Are you missing that? I'm not in the conversation, but I saw a tweet this weekend, and I'm totally paraphrasing it, but it said something of like a dad was there going, I can't believe I have to tell my kid he's too young to see Batman. Now, I don't know that's whether it's true or not. And that doesn't mean we can't have an adult Batman. You can live in a world with both. But so again, I don't know if that's a good and fair statement for the Batman picture, but it made me think of Star Wars, and I never want that to be the case. Rogue One or Avengers of the Sith, maybe even Rise of Skywalker, like I said, push against that a bit. PG-13, crying kids, whatever, warnings, strobe light warnings before, but at the risk of totally risk of being mocked for being a charity church mouse, Joseph, I just want kids to always be able to see Star Wars. I never want to have to hear that about Star Wars.
I do too. And I think there are lots of ways to do it. And, maybe I'm missing something. I wasn't looking at it through, a parental eye, partially because I'm not a parent and that's not what I was doing. Batman's PG-13 and there's some violence in that. But I mean, for me, without spoilers, it feels Rogue One like of these characters with good hearts who are at the risk of losing their good heart are mired in this hell. And now what are they going to do?
Yeah, and like I totally understand. Like 4 might be too young to see Rogue One. I don't, again, not being a parent, we're not the perspective. We'll ask Jennifer next week. But I've had some friends of mine who have kids who are like, oh, we've determined. My wife and I met. We've determined that she's too young. Our daughter's too young to see Rogue One. That'll be next year. That's not what I'm meaning. I'm just talking overall feeling. Anyways, to jump back in, and I think you're right. I saw a lot of tweets based on kind of what you're saying. Look at the heart of the Batman story. It's more maybe we're hopeful. Again, haven't seen it yet. Going to see it. We'll have a follow-up conversation.
Excellent. Yeah. I think for me, you're saying so many good things. I wanted to be sure to like own my journey, and everybody's different ages, different life experiences have different journeys. So I'm not trying to say it's anybody else's journey, but mine from when I grew up. But like I said, that idea that the dark and gritty felt real and sincere and honest and wasn't trying to lie to me or placate me or tell me to, be quiet and not bring up problems that I saw in the world. I so gravitated as I became a teen and a young man to the edgier side of Star Wars. That's, why I didn't like Return of the Jedi as much, because it felt a little safer. And like, I liked it, but the Ewoks weren't my favorite. And, Han seemed like he kind of softened around the edges and that. And I loved Empire Strikes Back. I loved the pain and trauma that the heroes went through because I felt seen. I didn't have a secret dad that I thought I needed to beat in battle, and then he cut my hand off, you know. But just the idea that, oh, they care about each other so much. I remember really starting to focus on those moments where Han and Luke are partying in Hoth, and they want to say so much, and they can't think of what to say, and it's just in their eyes. And it's like, oh, it's so real. They love each other like brothers, and they're both going to go through hell, and they're not going to see each other for so long. And it was, I enjoyed that. Not because necessarily it was like cooler, but just because I felt seen. I felt like, okay, now when I'm sad about stuff, my hero's going to be sad too, you know? Mm-hmm. So I really gravitated toward that, like, cooler. I guess I did think it was cooler. The cooler stuff. I still enjoyed the aliens, you know, and all that. And even in the prequel era, you know, I liked the stuff that felt heavy and real, like Qui-Gon dies and, you know, Anakin loses it when his mom dies and like, you know, Obi-Wan's pain of you were the chosen one. Like those were the moments that initially like really, really sparked me. And they are powerful moments. But I went through that journey of gravitating toward that. And now I'm in that place where like, I love those moments. I want those moments, but I want that balance of I still want a weird B movie. I still want to accept that silly humor pops up all the time in Star Wars. You know, I want to embrace all of it.
Yeah, I think it goes back to this kind of original thought of where Dark and Edgy comes from, realistic and everything versus the throwing that power fantasy stuff there. I think, yeah, we all have that at one point. And trust me, you love Revenge of the Sith, but you follow that and you kind of go straight into the Dark Knight era. I did want that for Star Wars, but I looking back, I don't know what that meant. You know, I don't know what that meant. When again, New Hope is. You know, billions die on a planet in one time. Like, so yeah, I get what you're saying about your journey.
Yeah, I think maybe I'm kind of wrestling with cool as a part of dark and gritty and edgy. But I think honestly, like that is a little bit of a part of it, right? Of like I say all the time, I love just embracing Star Wars as a thrilling adventure. I love embracing the moments that are a power fantasy. To this day, I wish, you know, that I could be Luke Skywalker and do a flip and catch my lightsaber and save everybody. And it's a power fantasy. That's a part of what it is. But I think for me, there's this risk of if I gravitate just to the stuff that feels adult, right? Like cool action, big power, heartbreaking moments, that there's a fear of opening up and being vulnerable and saying, I liked the cute things. I liked the silly things. I liked the weird things. I think that that's maybe a way to frame the danger of just wanting the edgy stuff is it's a way to kind of insulate yourself, right? Everything is cynical and dark and I am too. And, you know, there's nothing to criticize about me. And I just like power and armor, you know, versus I like the silly stuff. I like the hope, right? Hope is vulnerable. That's why this great story all across Star Wars about fear versus hope. Fear is easier. Hope makes you feel so vulnerable, right? Yeah. To be the one to go like, hey, team, what if we all work together, right? Like, especially the era we grew up in, that's vulnerable. And I think that's a big part of the balance of Star Wars to me of wanting to allow myself to be vulnerable enough to embrace hope and silliness and joy and family.
I think it's very important. I think you, like I said earlier, about sometimes showing maybe a lack of growth or willing to adapt to change or generations kind of up behind you having their own version of Star Wars or having Star Wars centered towards them while you're in it. I think all that can factor in. And sometimes you and I here are speaking in general stuff, and sometimes we're speaking to our own journey. I also spent many years in a more darker, depressed spot. I remember my old friend in college who's still out here, a big Star Wars fan too. But like we wrote a script, we're working on a movie we're going to shoot, and he had just gone through a breakup. But at the end, he's the hero, and to save the day, the villain's choking him, and he shoots himself with a gun through his gut. He dies, but he saves the day. And I was like, I lived in that kind of energy for a while, right? Because I was a depressed kid who didn't know where to put a lot of my angst, and I don't want to stay in that and have that only be the only one way to take stuff in.
Yeah, and I think there are a lot of great stories that tell those kind of stories, and I think they can be needed. I think people need that catharsis. They need to see their own pain on screen. So, yeah, it's that's what makes this conversation so interesting.
Yeah, yeah. And by the way, it would have been a great scene if we got more than $10 to shoot it. But also, yeah, it's like you don't want to live in that. And Star Wars is more than anything. Again, going back to that World of Ice and Fire versus Star Wars, where like Star Wars inspires me more to change, grow, be better, overcome. And those aren't always easy things. And sometimes they are just hopeful, happy-go-lucky thoughts. Yeah, you just get back up. The voices are in your head. Right? Like I totally get where that you could just kind of say that ain't real. That ain't for me. But I love finding the inspiration in it now.
Yeah, and I think as I've gotten older, the whole point for me is like, yeah, that often doesn't happen in real life. It, you know, if Lando made that call in real life, maybe not as many people would have shown up in the Citizen's Fleet.
Yeah,
that's what this story is challenging us to do, is to be vulnerable and allow hope in to see what might be possible.
What might be possible. Absolutely.
Yeah. So we do want to make sure that we celebrate some gritty, edgy, darker moments, because we do obviously love them as well. What are some of your current favorite moments like that?
Yeah.
And why do you like them?
Yeah. To stop myself from listing every Game of Thrones moment, I'll move past that. I am a Nolan Batman film. I Batman film fan. Like I love those three films. I probably enjoyed them more than Marvel movies for a long time. I think I love Marvel movies more than I did back in the day there. That was the big debate, right? Do you like Dark Knight or do you like Avengers? What do you like? So you can like them all. So I'm one of those. But you know what one we've mentioned before, and I know you're a fan of the series, but Daniel Craig's James Bond is what I would say that had this kind of real world edge that I needed for that series, because I'd never gone deep into Bond, right? I've talked to you before, even off air. Like I saw the Pierce Brosnan one. I loved the game, right? Slappers on, let's do this. But I didn't love anything that James Bond, because from the distance, I wasn't watching them. There just seemed to be a camp nature to it, right? I'm talking about just in general, seeing clips, Roger Moore stuff. And it didn't pull me in, right? Kind of turned me off to the idea. And then I go to Casino Royale with girlfriend and friends, and maybe even her brother was it. It was like, all right, I'll go see this, what everyone's talking about. And I was like, whoa, okay. There's just something gritty about it. That's dark and gritty. And not that, you know, James Bond was all happy-go-lucky before that. I just took to so much there, even the opening sequence, not just the parkour stuff, but just him doing something kind of what I would think was heroic, but it got him in trouble, you know, more than just give me your badge, McGarnacle, but just like, it was violent. It was real. And then Bond's, you know, just the emotional trauma, the love and loss, all those kind of things he was wrestling with was something I just didn't expect. And so I go back to those movies, but specifically Casino Royale, over and over again for that kind of real world edge.
Yeah, no, that makes a ton of sense. And yeah, I'm a big James Bond fan from the books to the movies, and that's a fascinating dance with the dark and the gritty and the realistic with the, you know, absolutely campy approach to this great contrast of that's what Bond is in the books is, you know, he's a brutal killer who needs to make his peace with it, and you know, all the fancy stuff is because he's trying to enjoy life to its absolute height, because he could die any day. And then that kind of gets blown out into he's always got a cool car and a cool watch because he just likes them, and he knows everything about, you know, even how to make a quiche, because, you know, like there's a lot of complexity to the gritty nature of Bond. But I always gravitate towards the films that go back to the roots of this book, which to me continue to be the story of how does somebody keep their humanity when they exist in a dark world and their job has darkness to it? How do they keep their humanity? And even in the darkest Bond films, like that's what's at work of, you know, that's what Casino Royale is partially about of, like, you know, you know my name, but like, who are you really? You know,
yeah.
I'm asking him who he is, you know, how does he handle falling in love and losing his armor and all those questions? And that's what makes it enjoyable for me.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, again, coming late to the game and only seeing it from the distance, it pulled me in. And one day I might sit down and read the books when I'm not reading Star Wars books.
Well, that would be a very fun podcast to do as we read through the Fleming novels. There's some great stuff and some dated stuff. I'll just say that. Dated stuff, but some great stuff as well. In the world of Star Wars itself, what moments do you gravitate to where you still like, yeah, that's dark and gritty and I love it?
I would say, I guess I go a lot to the Rogue One stuff when it's the cost of it all is really in front of you. the choices to commit, some of the Jyn Erso, like Jyn Erso crying in front of the hologram of her father is more dark and gritty than almost anything for me in Star Wars. Right?
Yeah.
It's a lot more of that kind of stuff. It's like, all right, so I'll say Revenge of the Sith. Cool. Yeah. But you know what it is? It's the pain in Kenobi's face as he's screaming, you were the chosen one, right? That clip that's so popular and you can be memed and everything like that. There's that suffering, that pain that I don't want to live in, but I'm drawn to that. But even that's why I like Padme's rumination so much. And just that's one of my favorite moments, and not a word of dialogue spoken between them. I think that's very realistic and heartbreaking. So I go to those kind of things.
Yeah, that's a really great example. Just that pain, right? Because we have not all been trapped in a secret marriage while the government is collapsing. Or maybe some of us are, but we all know that we need to be with the person we love to figure this out, and we can feel that it's not, how many times have you felt something like that while waiting for a text, right? Of what's happening, what's going on. I need to connect with this person. I know things aren't right. So powerful. For me, there's so many storytelling moments. I will go to one that gets discussed a lot. I love, at the end of Rogue One, I absolutely love the Vader hallway scene. And some discussion of that is, I've seen online of people being like, I don't know why people like this just fantasy about this murderer murdering people. And for me, what I love about it is, yeah, there is just like the space adventure thrill of like, yeah, Vader's supposed to be a really powerful badass. Let's see what he's like at the height of his power when he's truly unleashing. There's definitely just some like fun of that for sure. But the reason that I love that is I don't think that Vader hallway scene is a celebration of Vader. I understand some people might take it that way, but I don't think it's framed that way. We are literally seeing it from the eyes of the rebels who are standing up to this horror show that Anakin has allowed himself to become. And so it is dark and gritty. But for me, it's all about that perspective that makes a difference of like, this is what they're standing up to. This is what they're facing down. And even with all that power and all that violence that Vader has, people make sacrifices and that little baton of hope gets away from him. And even with all that desire to control, all that power, all that violence, he can't.
Yeah.
That last person's like, I know I'm going to die, but I'll stick it through the door because it's bigger than me. It's more important. You know, it's about how Vader, can't control everything.
Yeah. To talk specifically about that scene, I think you can live in both sides of the reaction to it. I definitely feel as a Star Wars fan of old, like it was like, oh, Vader at the height of his powers, right? We're always daydreaming about that. And that's part of the thing that brings to Star Wars, that cool thing. It's just, yeah, you don't want to necessarily live there. So I think you can celebrate that moment for that. And it's a horror show. It's a monster on the loose. It's all those things. But yeah, the rebel perspective. And then I absolutely know we've discussed this before, but one time I just had a kind of a negative reaction to a tweet. If someone was like, it's a cool scene, but it has nothing to do with the story. And I was just like, it's everything.
it's everything.
All the power in the world that Vader's gotten, greed, the more, the building of power, he's everything. And he can't get the thing he needs. It escapes. Hope goes on. That I think you're right. And I think, and it's okay to live in both. It's okay to live in both.
Yeah, absolutely. So I really wanted to highlight that one because it can be focal. But like, yeah, I love Boba Fett's rampage in The Mandalorian in season two. I love him on the Rancor. I think that can be kind of a dark and gritty moment. It's so emotionally complicated. We've talked about it a ton, so we don't need to go into all the whys. But, it's heartbreaking. But the scene where Han tries to reach Kylo and Kylo murders his own father. Like, that's pretty dark for a fun movie. And even The Force Awakens had that. Like, yay, Star Wars is back. Fun. Han Solo's son did kill him, and it was sad. You know, some of the magic of Star Wars is that we go to these dark places. We watch his characters fall so far so they have a chance to climb back up.
Look, and we've talked about this before as well. If Force Awakens comes back, Star Wars, soft reboot of the franchise, Han and Leia are separated. They're not together.
Luke Skywalker said, eh. Yeah. So many great things. Recently in Bad Batch, the destruction of Kamino, that was heartbreaking and brutal, right? But it was about those characters, trying to escape the past as it collapsed around them, Just a ton. I could go on and on. I really do like the dark and the gritty and the edgy of Star Wars. It's just how it all fits in as a part of the entire puzzle of Star Wars.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Does it bother you when the edgy of Star Wars bumps up directly with the weird, the silly, the cute, the childlike? You know, examples jump out like the Battle of Naboo, where we go right from the Qui-Gon waiting behind the laser gate to fight this terrifying figure of Maul to Jar Jar whacking his crotch. You know, there's a lot of tonal jumps in Book of Boba Fett. You know, it's some things people don't like, where there are moments where Boba Fett is a fearsome badass, and then there's moments where he's chasing the rabbit droid around in the kitchen.
Yeah.
You know, like, is it an old Hollywood comedy? Clone Wars animated series swings wildly from just like horrific mass death to like droid comedy. There's endless examples of Star Wars butting up the extremely dark to the very weird, silly, cute. How do you feel about that?
I look, the question of does it bother me? No. Next question. Doesn't bother me. No. look, it doesn't. I even sometimes disagree with George about Phantom Menace after that first screening where he and Ben Bird and Callum are kind of standing around with blank looks on their faces. And George is like,
might have gone too far.
Might have gone too far. I don't think you did. I really don't. I think we could take it in. And I like similar. It's kind of different. It's like, I don't agree with the Rise of Skywalker is too fast paced. Are you not watching the movie? Like, it's there. It's a little different question. I understand. But look, this is I get it. It doesn't always work in the films. I understand that. The Jar Jar crotch shots might be a bridge too far. I understand. So this is a very personal answer. You know, I think it's all realistic because this is what Star Wars is doing. Rogue One, a little bit of a different take. No rabbit droids being chased there. And it works. Mm-hmm. And it works relatively well, I would say. But look, man, I'm going to be honest. Like, I've been covered in the blood of crime victims and made some of my best jokes. It's just the way life is sometimes. And I can live with that. Each beat, each scene tells me something different. And I'd like to think these movies can allow you to go through that journey. Again, does it always work? Does every beat come together perfectly in all Star Wars stories? Comedy here, serious there? No, I understand it. And some of you might not like that, but I'm fine with it in that way.
Yeah, I understand that it bothers some people and it doesn't work for them. I think it's a valid opinion and I respect that. I think you can run into lots of like, hey, storytelling should have like storytelling should have tonal consistency, right? And if you've just had a dark moment, yeah, maybe you have a joke to kind of bring back some levity in, but it's got to be very delicately balanced. And this is one of the things I like about Star Wars. Sometimes Star Wars is like, delicate balance? What are you talking about? No.
Yeah.
We're not going to delicately balance that. We're going to go real dark, and then we're going to go real silly, and we're going to be right next to each other. And for me, that I know it's a totally subjective opinion, but I kind of enjoy that tension. I enjoy that that's a fact of Star Wars. The Book of Boba Fett chapter 5 with Din, I was just so fascinated by. We talked about during our review, like that first half is so dark and cool. That spaceship there, the space station, is so cool. Mando hacking people apart in a butcher shop, cutting his own leg, being told he isn't even a Mandalorian anymore and to just leave. You know, like there's so much of it that's like dark and cool and like, wow, you know. And then this whole second half of that episode, I kind of expected more people to push back on, and I was thrilled they didn't, because tons of, you know, jokes and fun. It's silly and wizard. But that's Star Wars to me. And I feel like that episode was one that was just like wrestling with the tonal nature of Star Wars, the tonal tension, and showing like, look, Din can live in this world of darkness, or he can allow himself to change a little bit. He can allow joy in a little bit. He can allow he can enjoy a ship going fast and say wizard, you know. It was the point to me of playing with those tonal shifts in Star Wars.
Yeah. That's a great example. That would you call that episode, The Tale of Two Mothers? Like, it's two sides of the coin. Yeah. And again, some specific moments we don't need to list through, but like, I'll always concede Luke tossing the lightsaber over his shoulder, whether it was intended comical or not, it played like it. And so maybe it was just a little bit of a record scratch. Like, I fully concede on those kind of things. But I'm still good with all of the tones existing in one movie, in one story.
Yeah, I agree. And I think it is, you know, it's always subjective, especially with comedy and how do those beats fit together? And is this a moment for this kind of comedy? And, you know, all that kind of stuff I think is important. Mm-hmm. And subjective, but I think for me, I like that both exist in Star Wars, and sometimes they exist kind of right next to each other.
Yeah.
So we have touched on this a bit, but I want to be sure to talk about this. Do you think the overall more sort of gritty, grounded nature of Rogue One is part of what makes it so popular?
Oh, 100%. No porgs were harmed in the filming of Rogue One, but also no porgs were in Rogue One. Yeah, I think it works, and it scratches an itch. I still would argue at the end of the day, it is a pretty, I don't want to say a hopeful tale, but it's about hope.
It's not subtle. It's the last word of the film, right?
Yeah. And I also think going back up top to like the Bill Moyers, New Hope came out at the right time. Rogue One came out at a real good time for us to have a real realistic take on the fight for hope. And I think it benefited from that in hindsight. And there were a lot of folks that like, hey, Force Awakens was, a little bit too bright emotionally for me or something, whatever it is. I think Rogue One benefited from that. Not a perfect movie by any sense and means. We've taken those dives into second act and all those kind of things. But I think overall, it was a war picture, and that's how it was kind of sold as. And not a lot of comedy, but K2S was fun. Baze and Chirrut have a funny relationship and interplay. But it all underneath it all is a lot of hope. It just didn't shine as bright as the other ones.
Yeah, I think I've been thinking about this a lot, about what people, just general audience, what people want out of Star Wars. And I think one of the things that makes Rogue One so popular is it's got a lot of the fun, the action, and the sort of spectacle of Star Wars and spaceships and blasters and Vader and, droids and all that. It's very Star Wars and, hundreds of TIE fighters taken off at once. But in general, the tone is in the world is kind of a little bit serious, right? I mean, the Borg Gullet is definitely B movie and pulpy, but not in like a fun way. It's invasive and dangerous, right? And the main source of humor, you're right, there's some great jokes along the way, but a lot of the humor is from K2SO, and it is wry and sarcastic, and his point of view is coming from a cynical place, right? Mm-hmm. Even my favorite joke of when Jin shoots the other droid and he's like, did you know that wasn't me? That's kind of a dark joke, right?
Yeah.
That's not Jar Jar, getting his tongue numb, right?
Could have been.
But I really love Rogue One because all of that grit and wryness is in service to a story of hope. Going back to what we were saying at the top, Rogue One doesn't end on, and they were wrong to fight.
Right.
It ends on, it's all about hope. And it's that question of Cassian's losing his heart. The whole Rebel Alliance are losing their heart. Jin doesn't want to look up. It's a story of people mired in a dark time who are at risk of losing their hearts, and they don't. So it is a story of hope, but the surface is all this gritty, darker, edgy.
Yeah, you said the word serious a little bit ago in this discussion about Rogue One, and I love that. I think there was it's almost like hey, kids, everyone, it's time to be serious. we got 2 hours of everyone. We just got to be serious, and I think that's why it worked. But I know some folks who don't love Rogue One who rank it a little bit lower in terms of Star Wars rankings, and that is one of the reasons,
Yeah.
So again, subjective, this we know, but I think the serious tone is a way to look at Rogue One.
Yeah. And I think for me, last thing I want to say about Rogue One is I do love it for all the reasons that I've mentioned.
Yeah.
But I don't want that to be always Star Wars. And I don't want let's be more serious. This is war. These are stakes. These characters are going to die. That's all great. And I like that, but I don't want it to push out the silly and the pulpy and the fun. I'd be happy if there were some porgs in Rogue One. I want there to be room. I don't want it to be like, we have to take Star Wars so seriously. I still want it to have this sense of fun, even though it's about deep philosophy and there's gritty action. I never want to lose the fun side of it as well.
Again, goes back to my statement of I don't want to hear too much that a kid can't watch this. And Rogue One is one of the films that maybe you have to determine is your kid able to handle this? You all make those decisions. I have to worry about a chihuahua. I think you're right. Again, it's somewhat subjective, but it'd be a lot if that's what Star Wars had become. Because again, it just Star Wars isn't about my now 45 year journey with it, or just 45 years on the Earth. It's not about that. It's about others. And so a constant serious tone would not allow for the next generation of 7-year-olds to enjoy it.
That is a really great way to say it. Let's remember the next generation of 7-year-olds. And on that, we will take a quick break and be back to continue our discussion.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number 1 in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
And we are back to continue our discussion of the dark side, the edgy side of Star Wars, and how it's balanced with all those other elements of Star Wars. We want to take a look at the future of Gridian Star Wars, which now sounds like I'm talking about a mascot. Anyway, we talked a lot about Rogue One and what we love about it and how it does have a different tone. It's in a darker time. And of course, one of the shows that's coming out is Andor, really exploring some of the darker times for that character. This is the official description, Ken, on the coming soon page on Disney's website. This is from Disney. It says Andor, a tense, nail-biting spy thriller. It says a lot of other things about who's in it, but that's what I wanted to focus on. Disney is describing it as a tense, nail-biting spy thriller. Are you excited for that tone? And if so, why?
I am excited for that tome. It is an extension of Rogue One, we think, right? And not just in terms of characters and people behind it, but you just kind of think, oh, we're going to live in that pocket. So I am okay with a serious toned series because I know that's not what we're going to live in all the time. Overall, right? I'm just overall. Now, I will say this. I'm not taking anything away from the path and career and life and purpose of Cassian Andor. His fight is real. His fight is deep. The fight goes beyond just the surface. It's his existence. Excuse me. So I don't want to undercut that. I do hope he tells a joke and laughs at some point. He's got so much on his plate. I just want him to be able to have a moment of levity. He in Rogue One, they have to, you know, the big cast, big crew, big ensemble. So you're not going to have a campfire conversation where Cassian's telling jokes. I understand that. But I just, all that to say in tone, I want that character. I want that man to be able to just laugh once because he deserves it.
Yeah. Right. I agree with you. I think, he's so charming. And those sparks of joy connection, you know, in Rogue One are so great. I'm really excited for Andor because I think in particular, describing it as a tense, nail-biting spy thriller, it's a kind of dark, gritty, serious that we haven't seen as much in Star Wars. The specific tension of espionage, right? Is he's undercover. Will he be discovered? He's working with an Imperial informant. Can he actually trust this person? Does he have to pretend to be close to someone that he isn't? Does he have to lie to himself in that way? You know, do you have those kind of scenes where like he's in a room and if the person sees that one thing on the desk, it gives him away. Like that kind of tension that's really born of espionage stories we haven't seen a ton of in Star Wars. And I'm really excited for that.
Totally. I mean, it won't work. Andor won't work if we tune in to see our buddy Cassian and he's learning to juggle at a party. You know, like it's gotta strike all that. And then the specific thing of the espionage in that time period, in that story, the rebellion, I am interested in that. And again, I keep saying this, you can live in both worlds. You and I here aren't pushing back against dark, gritty edges. Mm-mm. We're saying it's part of it and we just don't want to live in it all the time. And this series is I'm going to roll up my jeans to my ankles and wade in this serious water.
Wade into some serious water. But I do agree with you. I feel like Cassian's story could really be about, he has to accept what he has to do. He's racked with guilt, but he has to pack it away because he has to do those things, right? Because the payoff in Rogue One is, I did all these horrible things for a good cause because I thought it would all be worth it. Yeah. So I feel like in this show, when you're talking about wanting to see some joy, right? Not necessarily a stand-up set from Cassian, but some joy of like, I would love to see that balanced out with, who's fighting for? You know, he kind of mentions his family. He mentions he's been in the fight for 6 years old, but like, who is he fighting for in specific? Because he's not just fighting for ideology. He's fighting for people, right? So see who he loves either from his past, or does he encounter someone along the way that, you know, an informant that he becomes close to? So I think seeing that side of, these are the people I'm fighting for. This is all this love over here. So I turn around and do these dark things because I feel like I have to save these people I love.
Yeah, no, that's wonderful. It could just be simple as family. And I'm talking about flashbacks to a 6-year-old, but like family now, and that the fight goes on. And that's the reason he has no choice but to be in this fight. I think when I say like he deserves a laugh, it's not just, I want some gallows humor or something like that. No, I want to see a little bit of spark that by the time we see him in Rogue One, the spark is out and he's got to figure out why he's doing this and the is it worth it, everything. That's a different journey for that movie. That's kind of what I mean. I love that idea of family, a loved one, somebody loves, all those kind of things, the reason he's fighting.
Yeah, yeah, something to make him smile in the in the dark times. Yeah. For me, there's also this element of, we've been talking a little bit about the cute and the silly and the comedy, but there is also this element of the pulp, right? Just the weird. And I think that's, you know, so in the original trilogy, right? Of when you accept it because you've seen it since you were a child for the most part. But, you know, it's pretty weird that Han Solo gets taken out by becoming a brown ice cube, right? Like carbon freezing is weird. The Sarlacc is weird. I kind of want and hope for even though Cassian is living in this more serious time with this more espionage tone, I still love him to get, you know, attacked by a weird plant, you know?
Yeah.
How do you feel about that pulp side of things? The weird side, not cute, but weird.
Absolutely. Who knows the underbelly of the galaxy trying to find information? Maybe he does chase a robot rabbit droid. Like, come on, you know. I absolutely like to see that, especially if he's going into if he needs to go to the underworld anytime. I think people might be we might need a little break from Tatooine in the underworld. This I understand, but you know, yeah, I'd love to if he's captured and I hope if Indira Varma's playing a villain or whatever, I hope it's there's some delicious scene chewing moments there, you know?
Yeah, interrogated him by, you know, putting weird starfish on his eyes. Get me weird.
Yeah.
And I think it was absolutely commendable of you to try to get away from Tatooine, but we can't because we're going to be talking about Kenobi next. How are you feeling about the Kenobi balance? If it is a story of Obi-Wan facing Vader, which it seems like it is physically, I think emotionally, that means there's probably some dark, heavy moments. We know Obi-Wan Kenobi is not going to, you know, win. Yeah. In terms of he might win the fight physically, but he's not going to get Anakin to turn away from the dark side. What do you think is the right mix for Kenobi? What are your thoughts on its heaviness?
Yeah, I was trying to sum this up as best I could. I want Clone Wars Kenobi snark meets A New Hope weariness. And maybe it's the transition. Like, come on, it's you and you know, I still want some kind of like Sith Lords or our speciality. Is it really? Yeah, no, I want that kind of stuff. But, so much of what we think we might be seeing is what's going on inside of him. So we might have some quiet, more somber, introspective moments, but it's still Kenobi, man. It's still everywhere. He's got some humor, even in New Hope. I mean, Guinness kind of sets a lot of that tone, even, right? Should I have heard about the money talking? Like, it's always there. So I think that kind of mix that kind of make the dark, heavy moments pop even more.
Yeah. Yeah. I expect some of the kind of what I think of as the Empire Strikes Back gritty of like, wow, Kenobi has been through a lot. He's lost a lot of people facing Anakin, Vader, trying to get through to him. But maybe he gets close, but he can't do it. He wants to help people, but he can only help so much. And questioning whether he's on the right path. I think there's going to be like just a lot of great turmoil, right? Dark, heavy stuff. And Vader versus Kenobi, I think, you know, that's going to be cool and badass up to a point. But I think, yeah, within that, I think Kenobi handles dark situations with wry comedy, a little bit of a snark. But I think for me, much like Rogue One, we'll see. I think the story, even though it's going to deal with some of the dark, heavy stuff, in my opinion, the story is about Kenobi being an agent of the light. That's who Kenobi is. You can throw him through horrific darkness and he won't break, right? Mm-hmm. The Inquisitors, dealing with the Jedi death, his failure to save Vader, all stuff that's horrific for him, torturous, but he's not going to break. Some of his stories in the Clone Wars animated series that I love, like, this is who I am. That's what a Jedi is. You deal with it. You don't break. So I think maybe the show is going to be him reminding himself of that, finding his strength. Like, that's what being a Jedi means to me, is hope. And the hope doesn't break. Kenobi doesn't break, you know. And I think it's going to end on hope, that Kenobi having no doubt that Luke in the next generation will set things right.
Yeah, that big turning of the chapter in his life. I love this idea of if it's recentering himself, right? Forgiving himself, all those kind of things, all aiming towards the light. That's one of the reasons Kenobi's around this story.
Yeah. So excited for that possibility. I also want to ask you how you feel about shows like Bad Batch or Rebels that tell, from one perspective, a heartwarming story about found family, but it's sent against the backdrop of the Empire's tyranny.
Well, I love it because we talk often about inspiration. And so you know, I think back at like, you know, we have those moments you and I talk about in like The Phantom Menace, where it seems like the Trade Federation's occupation is just a matter of you wait around patiently while the droids process paperwork. And we get a sense that it's a little more uglier than that. And even E.K. Johnson's touching on that in the books. So you take that kind of thing. Bad Batch has this horrible backdrop, but it deals with it in a more realistic way than The Phantom Menace example I gave, which again, George was trying to do something different there. So I love that dance. I love that. Therefore, against this horrible stuff going on, these flowers are springing up from the concrete, right?
Mm.
And that really works for me in modern Star Wars now. So Bad Batch, that's why I know Bad Batch, you know, didn't hit for everyone too. Again, not every Star Wars hits for everyone. We understand that. But I heard, I was bored by this, or just cameo of the week. I don't know, man. I just was focused on that little ray of sunshine in the darkness in a black and white movie. We got the one splash of color to kind of move us forward. It doesn't downplay. It doesn't hide the serious stuff. That Kamino thing you mentioned, very, very dark, very big, very sad. The action's heavy. The costs are real. But then your humanity is still exists. Our humanity, not just the characters, but our humanity can still be found in those kind of situations.
Yeah, I really love Bad Batch for that, because it's showing very clearly, you know, some planets cheering the Empire. Some planets going, hey, wait, no, what? You're locking us all down. We're getting IDs. You're, you know, saying like, oh, no, we're going to bring industry to your planet by not paying you and making you work against your will. Industry. You know, it's not shying away from the darkness of the Empire, the cruelty of just like, we took what we wanted from Kamino and, you know, we're not going to work with you. We're just going to wipe you out. So it's dark and gritty, but it is so balanced by this little family who's trying to find their way through it. And, you know, a character like Wrecker, who's, you know, just trying to find joy in all these little places. But when we finish a mission, no matter how dark, we get a snack.
Yeah.
And of course, like, I think my favorite episode is that Cad Bane Omega one, where she starts to get a sense of like, oh, there's some darkness in my past, you know, looking at whatever these tortured creatures are in these, you know, in these jars. But she's still such a ray of light and hope. And I really like that balance in Star Wars where you have both.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
How do you feel about Rebels? Where would you rate Rebels? Because it starts with a real burst of like fun, right? And a lot of those early missions, the characters are sad. They have a lot at stake emotionally, but like the stormtroopers don't feel like a big threat. They get taken out pretty easily, but it's still set in a time of great darkness, and the characters go through a lot. How do you feel about Rebels?
I think it is Rogue One for a younger audience, right? It's that time period. I absolutely think it works that way. And initially, going back to 2014, well documented. I initially was like, yeah, this is bad. Like, just too silly. It's what is it? Puffer Pigs and Star. Are you telling me Star Wars is for kids now? I had some of that energy. That's an exact quote for me, but I had some of that energy, and that's why it's part of my own journey with it there. And the show, it's one of those things that you and I just discussed with Midnight Horizon, Daniel Jose Older. It's like it's talking with its intended audience, not added or down. And I think Rebels allows for some growth in its audience. The first season is a little lighter. It is, hey, this is this world you're part of, but there's some dark things in this world, and here's how you can deal with it. By the time you get to Sabine Wren bawling and working through her trauma with the Darksaber stuff, Kanan, all those things going on, even the Maul Kenobi stuff, and Ezra as he grows, Ezra as he literally puts aside the slingshot and becomes who he's supposed to be. Like, I think it effectively pulls everyone along for the growth, and that's why. But at the end of the day, always remains fun. It always remains funny, and always remains a dash of lightness when it needs it.
Yeah, I think maybe that's one of the reasons that Rebels has been such a powerful show to bring people into Star Wars. I think what you said about the way it invites you in, and there are stakes, the characters do have trauma, but it only gets darker, it only gets worse, and then to see the characters survive and thrive within that is a great Star Wars message.
Absolutely.
So in theory, one of the other upcoming shows we have is The Acolyte, which has been said to focus on the dark side. Do you expect it to have a darker, wry sense of humor given some of the other work of Leslie Headland?
Look, man, witches are funny. And I think Leslie Headland is bringing hocus pocus energy to Star Wars. You guys got it all wrong out there. No, you know, one of the things, she has a rom-com out years ago, Alison Brie, Jason Sudeikis. What is it, Sleeping with Other People? That's what, I love that movie. And it's a total different energy. I think the dark and gritty she potentially could bring, and we know next to nothing of this series, is right. the start of this conversation, this honest take on it. And if it is dealing with dark side energy, again, we don't 100% know. I think it won't be to glorify it. I definitely don't think it will be, but it will be to analyze how maybe you get to that spot. What is the trauma that gets you there? What's the trauma that keeps you there? How can you work through it? I absolutely trust that it's going to have some hope in the darkness. But just the title alone, The Acolyte, just that you just pop culture trains you to think that there's something gritty going on. So I think it's going to be a good mix, or it's just going to be Bette Midler singing, which might be fine.
Excellent. Hocus Pocus reference, right?
Yes.
I really liked Russian Doll that she co-wrote. And that has some just great dark comedy. That has some great people like, we're having a rough time and we're trying to figure our way out. And jokes are one of the ways that we handle it. So, you know, I think also the little bit that we've heard from Leslie Headland about really loving the sort of I want to look at a map of Star Wars and think, where could the adventure go? Right. That there's still a sense of like we would say like a globe trotting, but I guess galaxy trotting adventure. Along with a darkness, along with a wry sense of humor. That's kind of the mix that I'm expecting of, yeah, it's going to deal with the dark side, but deal with all of these aspects of it.
Yeah, absolutely. Fully formed picture.
So we've looked at a couple of the upcoming shows. Do you have any other hopes or desires for the future of what edgy and gritty can mean in Star Wars?
If we get to the Old Republic point and not just remastered games and everything, which people are excited for, all that kind of stuff, but if we get the, are we finally going to get there? Right. I would love to see it dealt with in a, I guess, well, realistic way, but just that they thread that needle on those characters with those red lightsabers, that they are still choosing to be on the wrong side of these battles as Star Wars kind of maintains it. That's my only hope if we go that direction. But with things like High Republic brings its own realism and honest take, but keeps the big Star Wars picture in mind. Again, you and I, but it's so fresh in my mind, just the Midnight Horizon. One of the things I just loved is just one of the first times I really saw Star Wars deal with crushes, love, desire, the crisis of all that. And speaking to a younger audience, quote unquote, with this young adult novel, just speaking in such a real way. It was edgy in its own way. And that's the kind of stuff I'd love to see a little bit more of in Star Wars too.
Yeah, no, I think it's really great that you brought up High Republic. I think that from interviews and from mostly from the actual text, it really seems like that is the goal of those storytellers, is to say, look, this is audacious that the Jedi and the other heroes of the galaxy would fight for a slogan like For Light and Life, or We Are All the Republic, that strive to get this delicate message of unity and empathy and kindness and working together and valuing everybody. These are great values, but they're so fragile. They're so easily attacked. And what's the journey of characters who are trying to live that mantra themselves, communicate it, back it up, and what's going to attack that, you know? And in some ways, the High Republic, I think, because you think of We Are All the Republic, For Light and Life, almost every poster is a Jedi with their saber up, you know, every book cover, not everyone, but a lot of them. You can think about it as like, yay, yeah, but, you know, those are some of the darkest things, events, right? Of just like, three major tragedies, some of the intrigue being characters can die, and they do. And oh no, will the character I love die? And, you know, characters going through horrifically dark things and then going, but I'm going to pick myself up back up again. Yeah. It's a really great, I think, study of Star Wars' relationship with dark and light, of the dark in the gritty is to show that those things are real. They happen. And then how are you going to navigate them?
Yeah, a lot of finding your purpose in the pursuit of hope, which is so hard. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Again, kind of this, I love the part of this conversation. And look, we're going, sometimes you and I are going different spots in our conversations because we're working through our own stuff or trying to find the needle. And I'm not trying to insult anyone if you do love Darth Malgus. But it's like, I look at a lot of High Republic stuff. That is the true definition of edgy stuff for me. Again, going back to what you were saying, honest, it's not a sitcom. It's Always Sunny on TV and everything ends up with a hug. There's death, there's destruction, there's loss of love, unrequited love, love you can't get. Like, there's all these big real themes. And also Jedi are dying horrifically, you know? So it's pretty dark, but it's all in the pursuit of hope.
Yeah, very well said. Very dark in pursuit of hope. And I think I want more stories like that. I would love some really dark, gritty stories about characters who don't break, or characters who do break and then try to find their way back. That's the dark and the gritty that I want in Star Wars. I enjoy it on the surface. I just want that heart to be there. So I'd love to see, I've been on record saying I'd really love an Old Republic movie, and I would love to spend time with the Jedi, but I would love to spend time with the Sith of how do they, you know, rationalize being, you know, this army of Sith, right? Yeah. Are there, you know, what are their relationships with one another? And I think a study of villains who have made the wrong choice are valuable and are interesting. And I think we can be fans of them and think they look aesthetically cool and that, but it's just, to me, it's got to be balanced. Yeah. And I would love to see that on the big screen.
Absolutely. It'd be great. It'd be great.
Yeah. I'd also love a Star Wars horror movie, a Star Wars John Wick movie. There's lots of like dark and gritty Star Wars stuff I'd like, as long as it ultimately does come back to the things that you're saying of a kid can watch it, at least a PG-13 rating, and that the message is ultimately trying to get back there to the light.
Yeah. Yep. I love that for Light and Life.
Indeed. Do you have... I'm going to ask you a final question, but before I do that, I want to see if you have any other big picture thoughts.
This is somewhat of a tough conversation to nail down. It's like I'm going into my past I don't ever want to say that I don't enjoy just some red lightsaber wielding monster hacking people into, you know, it's a weird thing of just living, right? It's like,
yeah,
you know, it's just part of it. I, you know, I'm a big fan of professional wrestling, and not just have been into it, but one of the reasons I love it is, you know, I kind of like getting punched in the face. It makes you feel alive, right? It's a weird thing for me to say, and I love some of that, but I also you know, it's also about telling stories that are about the good winning. I mean, it's all there. So it's fine to say it's both, as has been a great conversation to have, even though I don't know all the answers myself.
Yeah, no, I don't know all the answers myself either. I think I know what I like. I think I know the journey that I've gone on in the way I choose to look at stories and let myself enjoy stories in different ways. I think maybe that's the final thought. For me, I'm really okay to say a specific Star Wars story can be a tale of somebody who's made a bad choice and they're on their way to making a better one. Like, you know, take Rise of Skywalker. I love that is ultimately a story about Ben making a better choice, even after he's made all those horrific choices. But I still like watching him rage and just take down those cultists at the beginning.
Yeah.
You know, and for me, that's why I think why I like to talk about Star Wars being full of tension is that it doesn't need to be one thing. It can be many things and you can enjoy it on many levels. And I think I, as a viewer, want to have a relationship with myself where I can go, I enjoyed watching Kylo Ren brutally slaughter those people. Yeah. But that's out of enjoying the space fantasy, the action adventure, the dark fantasy of what's it like to give in to that anger. I don't agree with that. I'm not getting life inspiration from that. I'm getting life inspiration from Ben making a better choice. But I still enjoy those scenes for all these other reasons.
Yeah. Yeah. There you go.
Excellent.
Nailed it. Excellent. Nailed it.
Well, you nailed many things in a nice, dark, gritty way. My final question for you, Ken, is would you like to see a show just called Order 66, and we follow every Jedi that died that day, every single one.
Wow, it's a long series. Yes, so it's funny. Yes, jokey answer. Yes, totally. Love that. But why would I want that? To know that a couple survived. So even then, on a jokey level, I'm going towards hope.
Yep. I feel like we're starting to get, I'm sure there are already supercuts, but between all the different moments where we have seen that, from Revenge of the Sith to Book of Boba Fett and absolutely everything in between, we have seen so many moments. I'm sure we're going to see more. I think what I would like is an extremely long In Memoriam supercut on YouTube where it is really about celebrating these Jedi. Like, it's a nice picture of Ki-Adi Mundi. Then.
Yeah.
Then you see it.
Love. Oh, yeah. Yeah, there you go. I'd watch that content on Disney Plus, just hours of a roll call.
Absolutely. It's like one of those Watching the Fireplace Roars video, but much darker. Much darker. Well, that's our big look at this discussion. I think, as Ken said very well, this is one of those episodes where we're really wrestling with how exactly to define what we're talking about, looking at what it means in terms of what's the meaning of the story, what's the surface of the story, what's the thrill of the story, what's it like when dark things happen, but the general tone is like, yeah, let's not concentrate on it. There's so many different ways to look at it and so many different ages and emotions and things in life to approach it from that we hope you enjoyed hearing our thoughts from our life experiences. And of course, we're always interested to hear other people's journey. And in particular, this time, the journey with the dark, the gritty, the edgy in Star Wars. Ken, where can people find us?
You can take your dark self to the internet where it's even darker and find a ray of hope, we hope. We are on Twitter at Force Center Pod. We are on Instagram and YouTube as well. Facebook page is Force Center Podcast. The podcast is available on a lot of spots, including Acast, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and more. Merch available at tpublic.com/user/ForceCenter. And you can support us directly at patreon.com/ForceCenter. You can follow me at Ken Napsok. Go to my website, kennapsok.com. Updates on upcoming comedy shows finally starting to emerge, including a big one on June 4th at the Troubadour here in West Hollywood. If you're local, look for more information on that soon. Joseph, where can they find you?
You can find me on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok is at Joseph Scrimshaw. You can check out my website, josephscrimshaw.com, for all of my other comedy adventures, past, present, and future. But for now, for myself, for Ken, for Pong Krell, perhaps one of the darkest characters in Star Wars, this has been Force Center.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Megan Rinks.
And I'm Melissa D. Montz.
And like every other person with access to a microphone, we started a podcast.
On Mondays, we release Don't Blame Me, which is an advice podcast where listeners call in and we share our thoughts on situations such as what to do if you're going to your boyfriend's family function and you haven't told him that you previously slept with both his twin brothers.
Then on Thursdays, we release our podcast, But Am I Wrong?, where we ethically gossip about pop culture, politics, our lives, and your lives. Listeners write in and we tell them if they're wrong or right in a situation. Are you the hero or the villain?
On Tuesdays and Fridays, we throw in a little something extra as well.
Well, something, something. We strive to create a community grounded in activism, mental health, and inclusivity. Think of us as like your blunt, honest friends who give you advice that you need to hear, not what you want to hear. But we're also always rooting for your success. What we lack in credentials, we make up for in
opinions.
We do that in every episode, too.
We're professional unprofessional, so if you're looking for a new slate of podcasts to add to your routine, we're here for you.
Acast recommends.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.